Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization is responding to multiple cholera outbreaks that could flare up and threaten the health of more people if control measures are not intensified. More than 10,700 cholera cases and almost 200 deaths have been reported in five countries in the Eastern Mediterranean and African regions: Iraq, Bahrain, Kuwait, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Tanzania. We will discuss the cholera crisis on today's program. And to do that, we are joined, by our guest. First, from Olympia, Washington, is David Albert. David is board chairman of Friendly Water for the World, an organization working to expand global access to low-cost clean water technologies and information about health and sanitation. And in a moment, we will welcome Mr. David Albert. Also, our guest today will be Dr. Martin Mangle. Before we go to Dr. Mangle, let's welcome Mr. Albert. David Albert, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you with us. And in a moment, we will be joined by two more guests. One is Dr. Martin Mangle, and Dr. Mangle will be joining us from Paris, France. He's program leader of enteric diseases with Agence de Médecine Préventive and project director of the African Cholera Surveillance Network, AFRICOL. And we will have Dr. Mangle, are you there? No, he's not there yet. And another guest will be a third guest will be joining us from the Democratic Republic of Congo and share what is happening on the ground there, given that the issue is very much present there.
Who's from Congo? Say that again.
That's Dr. Jean-Luc Kambale Musubao.
Medical officer,
who will be joining us, and he is with Friendly Water for the World as well.
Correct.
So we hope to have both of the gentlemen join us very soon. Before we do that, Mr. Albert, let me come to you, but in just a second, let me welcome Dr. Martin Mangle. Dr. Mangle, again, is program leader of enteric diseases and project director of the African Cholera Surveillance Network, AFRICOL. Dr. Mangle, thank you for joining us.
Hello, Linda. Thank you for having me on the show.
Fantastic. And on the on the line also is Mr. David Albert with Friendly Water for the World. So, gentlemen, thank you again. In a moment, we will have Dr. Musubao to join us from DRC. We hope to have him soon. So let me start by getting a picture of what is happening. First, let me start with you, Mr. Albert. You are working on the ground, as well as Dr. Mangle, AFRICOL as well, is working on the ground. But Mr. Albert, can you give us a sense of what is happening where your organization is working?
So we work in 12 different countries. Our main work, we do several different kinds of work. Our main work related to cholera is in teaching communities to build what are called biosand water filters. It's a very simple technology made of all local materials that can wipe out up to 99% of bacteria and viruses from the local water supply.
Okay.
There are cholera outbreaks in, we know of, at least five countries, the worst by far in northeast Congo.
Okay. All right. Very well. And Dr. Mangle, AFRICOL is very much present on the continent as well. What can you tell us in terms of the extent of the problem?
Globally, Linda, we have about 3 to 5 million cases of cholera estimated every year, and about 100,000 deaths, or likely much more than that. And specifically for Africa, you have to keep in mind that before the large outbreak occurred in Haiti, 98-99% of the deaths occurred in Africa, and about 80-90% of the cases. And as the cases slowly decrease in Haiti, The caseload and the case burden in Africa becomes ever more important. And there are way over 20 countries each year that notify cholera to WHO in sub-Saharan Africa.
Okay. And WHO is raising the alarm as to, you know, what needs to be done. What can you tell us in terms of, because you are also involved, you also work with WHO. What is the if we're looking at globally, in terms of priorities, where is WHO really, what is WHO prioritizing at this stage? Is it a specific region, or is it more treatment or prevention? What is your take on this?
Well, WHO has a global mandate. There is now a global task force for cholera control at WHO headquarters in Geneva, and I mean they are really looking at this problem at a global scale through their five regional organizations that they have. And so they are equally looking for sure at the great situation that I just described from Africa. They're also looking at Haiti, also at Southeast Asia, namely Bangladesh and India, where cholera has been, which is kind of the cradle of cholera, if you so will, where cholera has been known for several thousands of years. So they're really trying to do all of this, and they're trying to look at an integrated strategy for prevention of cholera, so by providing safe water and sanitation, but also a new vaccine that is now available, and also to control cholera outbreaks where they occur, and there is a long list of those at the moment.
Okay. Mr. Albert, when you look at the DRC, as you mentioned, is one of the most affected, if not the most affected in the region, what can you tell us in terms of the main reason? I know we hear it's a lack of clean water and sanitation, but why is it so widespread in DRC?
Well, in particular in the DRC, the population of Goma in particular there's now 1 million people in Goma, and varies from time to time, but as many as 600,000 people in a very small space. So cholera will spread through the population very quickly when there's lack of decent sanitation and lack of good water, as well as limited availability of health care. And so the compacted population is what spreads the disease more quickly through the city and through the refugee camps.
Okay. Now, I have a question from Amy, because we do take live questions from our listeners, whether on Facebook or phone calls. And Amy is asking, and presently she's in Cameroon, she says, the rainy season seems to be a threat to cholera outbreaks in several countries, especially in Africa. Considering the rainy season is set to occur naturally every year, how can countries be better prepared to face recurring outbreaks of cholera? This is such an interesting and basic question. And perhaps, Dr. Mengel, I can throw this question to you. How can countries be better prepared to face recurring outbreaks, given that rainy season seems to be a threat for cholera outbreaks?
Yes, indeed. And my colleagues just mentioned the example of Goma. Cholera is a waterborne disease, so really what we need or what people need is safe water. They need water which has no Vibrio cholerae, which is the bacteria that causes the cholera syndrome. And what eventually is needed is that worldwide, everyone will need to have access to safe water through a pipe water system, as ideally as we have it in the industrialized countries. And in the meantime, making drinking water safe through, for example, chlorination, filtering, etc., are short-term solutions that can greatly decrease the risk of getting cholera. So that's really the mainstay of cholera prevention. And for this, really the public health system in each of the affected countries needs to organize, and partners like NGOs, WHO, and international agencies can help in this battle. But in the long term, cholera needs to be fought in each country and by solidifying and consolidating the public infrastructure.
Okay.
I agree with Dr. Mango, but I would also note that in many countries, cholera is spread by piped water. That is, the lack of proper filtration and proper chlorination and cleaning of water means that when cholera is in the public water system, it spreads much, much more quickly.
Okay. And Mr. Albert, when you look at the approach in terms of addressing this issue through your organization, what is your model?
Well, our model is based on the fact that there probably is not enough money from WHO or from the entire world for governments and large entities to provide for clean water, especially in very rural areas, very quickly. We think we can provide the skills and tools for people to do it themselves, with all local materials, to build small businesses and cooperatives to build the kinds of interventions that can prevent cholera permanently. In Goma, for example, where Dr. Kambali was not yet on the line, had gone into 26 orphanages. There are 26 orphanages in Goma, 3,800 kids, and he counted more than 700 cases of cholera, 67 deaths since January. He went in, had a team build biosand filters for each of the orphanages, and on September 2nd, we were able to certify that there was not one case of cholera in any orphanage in the city of Goma. The total cost was $1,980.
Okay. All right.
So if we could expand this, you know, massively while the world waits for a decent public water system.
Hmm. Okay. Dr. Mengel, did you want to react?
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic endeavor that Friendly Waters has undertaken. And the variety of actors, I think, in the field that work on water and sanitation, I think, probably have done a lot, probably more than we can even imagine to actually keep the numbers and not have them even higher than they are. Mm-hmm. So I think such efforts are needed in the short term, and to buy time for countries to improve their public water systems. And on top of that, I've mentioned briefly that there is a vaccine available. So in places that are at imminent risk and where short-term solutions are unlikely to be provided or to reach the populations at risk in due time, WHO recommends the integration of cholera vaccine as an additional preventive measure, so that even if people drink unsafe water, at least they don't get cholera because they are vaccinated.
And let me just mention that we are not able to reach Dr. Musubao. We'll continue, but when we do, we'll let you know. In the meantime, Dr. Mango, let me come back to you. You spoke about the vaccine. How accessible is this vaccine? Is it something that is offered to children at a certain age as part of the vaccination program? Or can you tell us a little more about this vaccine?
Yes. Well, this vaccine requires two doses. So you need a first one and then at least 2 weeks later a second one to have the full immunity. There is currently a stockpile, a reserve that WHO manages and has a capacity of 2 million doses, although there are currently doses that are being dispensed and filled up again. So there's a varying number of vaccine in that stockpile. But countries, not individuals, have to apply for this. As I noted, there are several areas that have big problems at the moment in the world that we know, the Middle East, Africa, Central Africa, East and Southeast Africa, several countries there. So there are always, Haiti for sure, several requests from countries in parallel, and the current supply is not sufficient for all of these countries. Now, the international community, led by WHO and big donor organizations, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, UNICEF, Doctors Without Borders, AMP, all working together to try to increase the supply of this vaccine to make it more available, more quickly available in times of crises. And I'm pretty confident that over the next few years we will see more of this available so that we can work together with the colleagues that provide safe water to provide, let's say, the best possible protection, at least in the short term, for populations that are extremely vulnerable and extremely at risk, at extreme high risk of suffering from cholera outbreaks.
Okay.
I agree with Dr. Mangal. I would note that many of the places where we work, in East and Central Africa in particular, there are no doctors, there are no nurses, there is no public health infrastructure, and sometimes there aren't even roads. So it would be wonderful to get cholera vaccine to where it's most needed, but the money won't answer that question.
So there is this comment that we hear often, and someone has sent this question anonymously. He says, is cholera a disease of the poor? Is it something perhaps that you are suggesting, Mr. Albert?
No. Cholera is an equal opportunity, deadly disease.
Okay.
However, sometimes wealthier people have better access or able to purchase clean water or using reverse osmosis systems or other ways to clean their water. But the bacteria itself, simply where there's poor sanitation, poor hygiene, and lack of clean water, you'll see cholera everywhere. It's interesting. We do some work in India, and we find that when there is a cholera outbreak, or a typhoid outbreak for that matter, you'll find it almost equally spread among populations.
Okay. Now, Dr. Mangal, you spoke about the vaccine. Who should get vaccinated in an ideal world?
In an ideal world?
Yes.
Well, maybe I can reply to that. In an ideal world, everyone would have safe water, so you wouldn't need any vaccine.
Okay.
But as it is now, let's say we'd have an unlimited supply, then there are models that classify populations at a high risk, including slum dwellers, people without improved water sources and without access to sanitation, to around above 50 million people in sub-Saharan Africa, and at least an equally high number in Southeast Asia, although I don't have the exact numbers for that. So anyone without reliable access to improved water, drinking water sources, sanitation would need to get vaccinated to have an immediate protection to buy some time to improve the water supply.
Okay. Now we have questions from our listeners, and they're very type of basic questions in terms of prevention, addressing cholera and everything. And one of the questions here from Paul, he says, what are the risks for a pregnant woman who has cholera for herself and the baby? Dr. Mangal, is it something you could answer?
Yes, well, what we know from studies is that pregnant women have an increased risk of dying themselves and of having miscarriages, so of losing the fetus. So it's mm-hmm. either or obviously both that are extremely more likely if a pregnant woman gets cholera.
Okay. And Mr. Albert, given your experience working with communities where there is no access to road, perhaps you could answer this question. Lady Christelle wants to know. She says, in a place where there is no clean water, What can people do at home to prevent cholera to spread?
Well, the main thing is focusing. Number one would be focusing on sanitation, the proper use of latrines, hand washing will actually wipe out quite a bit of the spread. The next step is trying to find access to clean water. We particularly like to use biosand filters because they can be built locally by people themselves, and we can train them to do that. We actually work in several Botswa pygmy communities where we have basically changed the situation from where there was a child death every three days to fewer than one every 6 months. This can be done, in fact, at the local level. People attempt to boil water in some places. However, sometimes they don't boil it long enough, and the result is not particularly good. Chlorine can kill cholera as well, but you have to use it, religiously, every time, and we find that very difficult for people in many situations. They actually don't even have access to it in many places.
Okay. And Dr. Mengel, what are the signs of cholera, someone developing cholera? The question here is, we know about diarrhea at some point. How do we make a difference between cholera-related diarrhea and any other diarrheal disease, for example?
Yes, so cholera usually starts about 6 to 12 hours after having taken up the bacteria, and one should note a significantly large number of the bacteria. So usually water has to be quite highly contaminated for it to cause the cholera, full-blown cholera disease. That just on top of the earlier remarks on the prevention by my colleague. It usually starts with nausea, headaches, general generally feeling bad, and then very violent and very abundant diarrhea starts, and that is usually quite characteristic. The classical syndrome talks about rice water diarrhea, which is really just almost pure water with a few kind of grains of solid material from the intestine, and so that's quite characteristic. So cholera causes a worse, let's say a very, very violent diarrhea, worse than what you would expect in your usual kind of like diarrhea caused by a virus, like norovirus or something like that. And there's usually vomiting, and then due to the dehydration, to the loss of body fluid through the diarrhea, the patient gets cramps, weakness, falls unconscious, falls into coma, and eventually dies. And that can happen quickly, within a few hours, only 6-7 hours, sometimes if not treated. So diarrhea is one of the few diseases probably that can take a completely healthy adult from complete health to death within just a few hours. Few diseases can actually do that in that short time. The good news is it's very easy to treat cholera. All you really need to do is replace the fluid that is lost. Mm-hmm. So either by drinking oral rehydration fluid, which is basically water mixed with a certain concentration of salts, and this comes ready-made in little bags that you can mix at home. And in cholera, during cholera outbreaks, there are stations, little health posts that distribute this kind of solution. So with proper treatment and proper access to treatment, no one has to die of cholera. Mm-hmm. And even in such a huge outbreak as in Haiti, the cholera death rate is way below 1%. I think it's about 0.5% or so of the overall since 2010 that patients have died. And that just shows you the good treatment that's actually available. And if the drinking is not longer possible, you can replace fluids directly into the vein, with special rehydration solutions that are infused into the patient in a health post or in a hospital or in a cholera treatment center.
Okay.
So to back up what he said. I wish Dr. Musabal was here because he witnessed many of the cholera deaths in the orphanages where the death rate was almost 10%. And again, these deaths could have been prevented with both prevented or treated if there were proper access to treatment, but they could neither afford meds nor hospitalizations. And when the kids died, they couldn't even afford coffins. So, and this is in the city where there is a significant public health infrastructure, several hospitals, many NGOs located, government sources, and still the death rate was almost 10%. I wanted to follow up on a comment which actually goes back to the previous question and Dr. Mango's excellent summary. You need a fairly high concentration of Vibrio cholera in order to usually to contract the disease. And what happens, cholera usually is concentrated in the water before the rains come. That is, when the water sources begin to dry up or the concentration of cholera goes up. Then when the rains come, that cholera gets spread much, much more widely. So it's not just a matter of rainfall. Actually, typhoid is, I usually think of, is the disease most associated with rainfall. But rather, the drought followed by rainfall is usually when you see cholera spreading more rapidly.
Okay. Now, Dr. Mangold, tell us about Africol's work in terms of addressing this. When we look at sometimes the way it's spread, sometimes it seems to go regional. Is there a need for better collaboration between health authorities in neighboring countries? And how is Africol addressing this issue?
Yes, I would absolutely say that there is a need. And again, I think Goma is a prime example of this. Goma is a large city where around a million people, right on the border of the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda. And so are many other places located basically on border crossings. And cholera definitely does not respect national boundaries. So the collaboration between neighboring countries such as the Congo, DRC, Rwanda, and Uganda, which also has a border with DRC along lakesides, or if we look at a coastal environment such as the West African coast, Ghana, Togo, all the way down, actually, to Nigeria or further up north and to Guinea, all of those countries have suffered large outbreaks, and they are often correlated in time. So those countries really would benefit from closely working together. And in Africol, we're very lucky to have a network of countries that work using standard methodology for cholera surveillance. So basically, notifying at each case and at the place where this case occurred and what time and what date the symptoms started, and then confirming the Vibrio cholera in the laboratory from the stools of that patient. And this allows us to compare the epidemiology of cholera between the different countries and exactly to pinpoint which are places at increased risk. Yep. Because okay. Although we've heard from Friendly Waters how, let's say, simple the tools can be that can have a huge impact, getting them to the people seems to be a
challenge.
Big problem.
Yes, and we have to leave it there, unfortunately. Dr. Mangold, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Mangold with Africol. Mr. Albert with Friendly Water for the World, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Gentlemen. And I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, D.C. with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Thank you, Lenore. Bye-bye.